And joining us, almost like we're back on course now, we have a state representative representing the 6th Plymouth District. This is actually the 6th Plymouth District edition of Monday Night Talk with Josh Cutler. Josh, how are you, sir?
Hey, and you're pinch hitter extraordinaire. I want some credit for that, please.
Oh, all right, sure, okay.
How are we doing, gentlemen? Good to be on the show tonight.
Good.
We're doing good. You got like a shortened segment. We thank you.
Quite all right. Dave, it was great to hear Dave Wagner. I caught a little bit of your guest beforehand about the No One Olympics, so some good guests tonight. You guys are bringing it.
We are, but I have to say is that you actually got to be our Brock Holt tonight. Anybody who's a Boston Red Sox fan, you're coming off the bench again.
Yep.
That's the second time in as many weeks to fill a void in our lineup.
And put me in, coach. You know, wherever you need me, I'm ready to play.
Yeah, you're a multi-positional player, and you're going to chat with us at least for a couple of minutes about being a lawmaker who's looking to repeal a part of a law that prohibits the publishing of information about domestic violence arrests, especially in public daily logs. Give me the breakdown on this particular law that you're looking to change.
Sure, yeah, thanks, Kevin. Thanks for bringing that up. It's an important issue. So last year, the legislature passed a really good bill dealing with domestic violence and trying to address some issues that arose with the Remy case and others. And I would say 98% of the bill was great stuff, strengthening our laws, providing more funds, better programs to help combat domestic violence. And but, one of the things that we did do, which I wasn't as thrilled with, was to change the way Massachusetts law is in regards to police logs. It used to be that if someone was arrested for domestic violence, they had probable cause for the police did to arrest them, that their name would appear, and they would be part of, the public process. They'd be in the police log, they'd be arraigned, and so forth, the way our criminal justice system, historically has operated. And as a result of a change in the law, that's no longer the case. And so today, if someone is arrested for domestic violence, assault and battery, anything related type offense, their name is shielded from public scrutiny. And, we think that that is not the right move. We obviously absolutely want to do everything we can to protect victims of domestic violence. That's, no one disagrees there. And certainly protecting their confidentiality is paramount. But the same can't be said for perpetrators and alleged perpetrators. And I think that's where the law may have, by good intention, taking a step in the wrong direction. And, we want to bring, we've done such a great job, and the advocates have done such a great job of bringing domestic violence out of the shadows. And, to have it sort of step back into the shadows where we're sort of shielding people who are committing these crimes from public scrutiny, I think is not the direction we want to be going in. So I filed a bill, and I'll be working on this to try to change just that one portion of the law, otherwise with a great piece of legislation.
Josh, is it only preventing these names to be published currently in papers, or does it prevent general crimes that you may be able to find in, say, a quarry to be hidden as well, or is it just in the publications?
That's a great question, Joe. So the way the law is today, if there is an arrest, the police cannot disclose that arrest, whether it's in the police log, or it's actually interesting tangential issue that was raised to me. Even if another state agency, like Department of Children and Families, would ask for information, the police couldn't even reach it to them. The only way it would become public is if the person was arraigned in court. And so that is a public event. And so, obviously at that point, everything would be known, and the police reports and so forth would be known. So really, the police fraud issue isn't really preventing someone from facing public scrutiny. It's just delaying it. And so that's why we feel that it's an important step in the process, and that it does promote accountability. And so people know if someone in their community has been arrested for a crime, we have a history in the United States of no secret police, no secret arrest. Everything's done out in the open. Assuming there's probable cause, there has to be a basis for an arrest. And if there is, and if police believe that there is a probable cause, then we apply public scrutiny to that. So that's how it's always been. And, again, I think this was a well-intentioned step sort of backwards.
Well, now you're a former newspaper editor. I mean, well, actually, you're not really a former. You still do the Pet Gazette, right?
No, not anymore.
Oh, so you have okay. So you're
a
former.
I'm definitely a former, yeah.
You're a former. What kind of a turmoil does that bring to you as being somebody who always looked to kind of get the information out there to where you want to kind of? I mean, you're right. This isn't hiding it completely, because once the individual is arraigned in court, that's something that is public knowledge.
Right, and that's the key issue there. You just put your finger on, Kevin, is that there are situations in which someone could be arrested and then, for a variety of reasons, not be arraigned. Frankly, those are the cases that we want to be most concerned with. You know, there's some instances, if you look back at the newspaper headlines of the Remy case, where you might have seen people arrest that didn't result in arraignments. And so people have a right to question at that point, why? What was, you know, what happened? And so we would never know that today because of the fact that these arrests are kept secret. And that's really the issue. And this isn't about helping newspaper reporters. I mean, I think, you know, they have their jobs to do, and we respect that. This is really about the public's right to know and about not protecting or shielding people who are committing domestic violence. That's the underlying issue to me.
Now, are you doing this alone, or do you have somebody who's helping you draft this?
So I drafted it. It's been filed. It's it's being referred to committee as we speak. I think, you know, dates and so forth will be set in the next couple of weeks. The Massachusetts Newspaper Publishers Association originally came to me last fall with their concerns about this bill and asked me for their assistance, for my assistance in drafting it. And so we worked together on it. And, we've been working together with some of the domestic violence advocates. They have very legitimate reasons for why this law came into being. They're afraid that people may be reluctant to come forward. And so, you know, that's a very legitimate issue, and we want to work with them and sort of work in a cooperative way so that we can try to, you know, come up with a way that's going to keep the public's right to know but also be respectful of their concerns. And, you know, whether or not we can do that, it remains to be seen, but I can tell you that we've had a number of sit-downs, and, you know, they've been very appreciative of what we're trying to do, and I think we respect what they're trying to do as well.
Are you getting support from not only DAs around the state but also from the Mass Chiefs Police Association?
So we've had conversations with them. This is very early in the process. As you know, Kevin, the bill was just filed last month, and it's just being referred to committee now. So it's kind of early to know. I did see there's been a lot of news coverage of this lately. Patriot Ledger did some good coverage. And I believe the district attorney in Norfolk County was quoted as being in support of this. And hopefully we'll bring more law enforcement in. For them, it really, you know, we're sort of putting them in a bind because we're telling them, we're sort of adding more bureaucracy and rules about what they can and cannot do. I think they would just like to do their jobs and let these decisions be made by other folks. So I'm hopeful we'll have their support. But again, it's really an issue, in my view, of about, you know, public scrutiny and making sure we're working with our domestic violence stakeholders to make sure they're part of this conversation.
Again, we are speaking with the State Representative Josh Cutler, who's talking about some legislation that he's been working on. We just got you for a couple of more moments here, Representative. Again, we thank you for filling the void. I want you to take a moment to kind of talk about some other legislation that you're hoping that will help generate about $80 million annually, and that is a way to kind of end the stash of offshore cash by corporate entities.
Yeah, this is another interesting issue. And again, you know, in our limited time, just the quick version is that, you know, we all have, issues that we'd like to see more money spent on. I'd like to see more money come back to our district for Chapter 70 for school aid. Obviously, we have needs at the MBTA. And trying to find revenue to pay for those things without increasing the burden on our taxpayers is always a challenge. We don't want to cut services. We don't want to raise taxes. So how do we solve that? Well, one way we can do that is to close corporate loopholes. And there's a big one that's costing taxpayers about $80 million, according to some estimates. It's called the Water Edge Loophole, and it allows a small number of corporations in Massachusetts to essentially offshore money that they've earned profits on here in Massachusetts and send it to tax-free destinations like the Grand Cayman Islands or Luxembourg and avoid paying Massachusetts corporate income tax. And studies have shown that this would, if we were to close this loophole, it could recoup about $80 million to Massachusetts every year without raising tax, simply enforcing the law and making these companies, you know, just like any small business out there that's listening now in WAPD land, you know, they have to pay their fair share of corporate taxes like we all do to pay for the services we all want. And these companies are taking profits that they've earned here and sending them out of state and actually out of country to avoid that. And that's not right. And so we have a bill that would close that loophole. It's earned a broad base of support from Democrats, Republicans, all across the political spectrum. And I think it's a matter of equity and fairness. We can have a great debate about taxation and where we want our spending priorities to go. I think we all agree that we want to be fair and equitable to all. And this is one way to close that loophole and, I think, fix a loophole that, frankly, needs to be fixed.
Let me ask you this real quick, and that is, would you happen to know off the top of your head some of the companies that might be perfect examples who might do this? Would you have any names in your head?
Sure. There's, I have a whole list. There's about 10 Massachusetts companies that are on the Fortune 500 list that do business here in Massachusetts. I think TJX, Staples are two of them that have used offshore tax havens. And again, to be clear, it's not illegal to use an offshore tax haven. There's nothing illegal about it. But it also shouldn't be encouraged and incentivized to allow them to actually escape taxation here in Massachusetts by doing so. Again, this is a bipartisan issue. Senator John McCain, actually, Republican senator from Arizona, has been one of the leading fighters on this in Washington, D.C., and it's something we can address here in Massachusetts in a small way to fix this particular loophole and remedy the law.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Anything you want to say in closing on either one of these two issues that you took a moment to kind of explain to us?
These are both complicated issues, and I've kind of gone through them a little bit quick, but if people want to learn more, feel free to drop me a line, josh@joshbutler.com, or visit my website, and I'm happy to hear feedback on either of those. And if you're a Duxbury resident, don't forget to go down to PAC tonight and go attend Duxbury Town Meeting.
There he is, the state representative. State Representative Josh Cutler, who once again coming through in a pinch to help us out. We'll definitely have you on in a couple of weeks. And
someday, Kevin, I want to be the first choice, okay?
Okay.
Promise you that?
You got it. You are.
All right.
Make sure you tell Jim Cantwell that.
I will.
All right. We'll be back.
Gentlemen.
You got it. When we come back, we're going to speak with Kerry J. Byrd, coldhotfootballfacts.com. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.